La primera canción está escrita cuando nuestro comandante en jefe leyó la carta de despedida del Che.
Aprendimos a quererte desde la histórica altura, donde el sol de tu bravura le puso cerco a la muerte.
Aquí se queda la clara, la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.
Tu mano gloriosa y fuerte.
G'day, you're listening to Reds Under the Bed, the official podcast of the West Adelaide branch of the Communist Party of Australia. This podcast is proudly brought to you by The Guardian, official newspaper of the Communist Party of Australia. You can read it online at www.cpa.org.au/Guardian. Now, the legacy of Dr. Ernesto Che Guevara is particularly evident in the medical brigade sent around the world by the Cuban government. In this week's show, we'll hear a report on the work and the achievements of these brigades, and we'll take a break now and then to play some of the best in political song. Today's report comes from a recent meeting of the West Adelaide branch of the CPA and was accompanied by a visual presentation. If you'd like to view this as you listen, go to www.cpasa.blogspot.com. There you'll find a link to the downloadable file. Hope you enjoy the show.
Just firstly on Che Guevara, between now and next year, which will be the 40th anniversary of his death, I'm predicting there's going to be a lot of material come out. That happened in 1997 and 1998. There was some biographies released. You know, there was one by John Lee Anderson, famous one, you know, big fat red one, and another one by Jorge Castaneda called Compañero. And the one by Castaneda in particular was really poisonous. It said that Che had a real disturbed personality, that he was out of favour with an increasingly pro-Soviet Fidel, and that he stuffed up the finances of the country, and he left to go to the Congo and then to Bolivia in disgrace, and, you know, with this sort of suicide mission in mind. Mm. It really was this terrible hatchet job. And ever since then, the right wing's been pretty active, particularly on the internet. These are links to re-education sites where people, particularly young people that have grown up respecting Che Guevara, they can go and re-educate themselves. So not subtle, is it? But yeah, and the point I made was that the object of this exercise is to convince you that Che Guevara and the other revolutionaries, the famous ones, that they wasted their lives. And it seems like an academic exercise, but the point is to convince you that if you're committing yourself to social change of a radical nature, that you're wasting your life too. And you know, remember that T-shirt that I referred to another time, it said that, you know, the struggle, the battle of ideas, takes place in your head. And yeah, so, and it says put up a fight. So you try to resist this stuff. Yeah, so did Dr. Ernesto Che Guevara waste his life with his commitment to revolutionary change in Cuba, Latin America and elsewhere? And I reckon my trip to a practical answers to that, I really strongly believe that he didn't. I went to Venezuela, as you know, for the 12th Congress of the Communist Party, and I really respect the work of the people, you know, working at revolutionary change over there, the party in particular. But yeah, I told them in Perth that Caracas is a really confronting place. This is the shot that John Moore took when he went on the work brigade, or the solidarity brigade rather, and that makes it look better than it actually is. I remember it was actually darker and more forbidding than that, but most of Caracas is like that. Most people live in these places without any services, without running water, without proper sewage. Yeah, there's no roads in between it, it's just these little narrow walkways, and they're very dangerous places. Yeah, and the government of Chavez is funding a massive drive to provide healthcare and other services through to the 80% of the population that are still poor to this day, and that they've never had access to good quality free healthcare. And that's being done by re-diverting the oil revenues from the PDVSA, the state-owned oil company that used to go to into the hands of the bureaucrats and local elites. And they do it, they've got medical missions led by 15,000 Cuban family physicians, medical specialists, dentists, and even sports trainers. This one is Misión Milagro, you know, miracle mission, as well as regular medical services. The Cubans perform free eye surgery. Like in the first 10 months of 2005, the Cuban specialists restored eyesight to 80,000 Venezuelans, things like cataracts and glaucoma. And yeah, talk about Misión Milagro a little bit later as well. Yeah, the statistics in this thing can be a little bit dry because it's a big commitment that the Cubans are making all over the world. Yeah, more on the Cubans working in Venezuela. These are a couple more of John Moore's shots. Yeah, they work in the toughest areas of the country. Some of the ranchos, these slums are called, they're really no-go areas. There's got gangs and drugs and prostitution, you know, violent crime. Every night there's a, you know, murder in these slum suburbs. And the Cubans, they used to live in the same little shanty buildings as the rest of the population, but now, you know, even driving in from the airport, you see these little hexagonal buildings nestled in amongst them. The Cuban doctors, they've got their consulting room downstairs and they live upstairs. You notice that on the bottom floor there's hardly any windows.
Yeah.
these are seriously dangerous places. And the living conditions in these areas are really hard, and all of the poor people in Caracas respect the Cubans. My guide from the youth, Jose, he said that the Cubans never complain, ever. And there's a lot to complain about. Yeah, this is Venezuela's been building a lot of improved facilities. Yeah, more shots from John. These are polyclinics being built under this Barrio Adentro 2, like the sort of mission into the neighbourhood, you know, barrios. And this clinic, it's like a Cuban polyclinic, it's named after Dr. Ernesto Che Guevara. In Barrio Adentro 3 and 4, they're going to be building hospitals equivalent to the Cuban hospitals and research hospitals.
That was the end of part one of our report. Now we'll have a little bit of music. Here's some Intijimani. Thank you.
Bolívar Simón. Nació de tu Venezuela y por todo el tiempo vuela como candela tu voz, como candela que va señalando un rumbo cierto en este suelo cubierto de muertos con dignidad.
Oh, the wonderful sounds of Intijimani with a great song about revolutionary leader Simón Bolívar. Very good stuff indeed. Now we'll continue with part two of our report.
You know, even before I got to Cuba, I was constantly being reminded that, Cuba, even though it's economically blockaded and it's cash-strapped and so on, that it's something of a superpower, you know, like a medical superpower. And one example of this superpower status is something called ELAM, the Latin American School of Medical Sciences. That was set up in 1998 at the initiative of President Fidel after the hurricanes Mitch and George devastated the Caribbean. And I didn't visit ELAM, but I had a bit of a visit from it, because when I was flying on the plane, I sat next to this couple, and you know, young couple, and I struck up a conversation with the guy because he had a really great-looking T-shirt on. It had like Tanya and Che Guevara and Martí and Fidel, and in sort of roughly Spanish. And I said, "Oh, I really like your T-shirt." It was really embarrassing. He wanted to take it off and give it to me. You know, in the plane.
Did you take it? All right.
I would have felt a bit bad, but. I explained that I'd just come from Caracas from the Congress of the PCV, and he said, so had he and his girlfriend. You know, they're both members of the party. And he was in the third year of his studies at ELAM, you know, the Latin American School of Medical Sciences, and she, you know, at the Salvador Allende Medical School. There's 21 medical schools in Cuba that cooperate with ELAM, and she was in the second year. Yeah, like I think there's 9,605 students from all over the world. Like the rest of them, like they study there for free, and the only condition on them is that when they go back to their country, they have to go and work in their own poor community. There are 80 young people from the U.S. studying there, poor students, mostly from African American background. They can't afford the $200,000 plus for medical qualifications in the US.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, it was interesting because one of the women I met in Cuba said her daughter's boyfriend was an American studying medicine in Cuba.
Yeah. Mm. Not alone. In the US, I found some stats. There's one black doctor for every 2,000 people. You know, 2,000 black people. Like in Cuba, the ratio of doctors to the population, like silly to try to separate the Afro-Cubans from the rest of the population.
There's no separation in Cuba, so
no.
Why should we separate them?
No, that's right. But the ratio there is one doctor for every 177 people. That's the best ratio in the world.
There seem to be hospitals on every block in Santiago.
Yeah. Yep. And half the doctors are women. Yeah, I've got some quotes from these African-American women. Teresa Glover, she said, I love the school. I really want to be a doctor, and I couldn't have done it any other way. I started working with patients right away. This Nicole Murray, she's from New Mexico, and she said, the teachers are very strict. The teachers really want you to be successful.
Yeah.
I had it in Perth, you know, in case there were some young people that thought, oh, yeah, cool, I want to go and study in Cuba. The teachers are really strict. I mean, I think it's a cultural thing that would be pretty shocking for somebody coming from Australia. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're not at a tute, the lecturer or the tutor will actually go out and find you and bring you back, you know, almost like
well,
this.
Well, because, you know, who's paying for it?
Yeah.
Now for some slightly different music, here's Dick Cockin.
The good ship Grandma lies at anchor in the harbour, waiting for the evening tide to bring high water. It's bound for Cuba, she must go across the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean Ocean. She's carrying a human cargo, 83 good compañeros, each one burning with determination to be free against Batista, the fatalista. Courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. 10 days on from Mexico, these compañeros landed on the Cuban beach, Los Colorados. Fidel said, this year we'll see our country and its people free, or else we will be martyrs. We've only guns enough for 20, the enemy's arms are plenty. Meet him and defeat him, and he'll keep us well supplied against Batista, the Fidelistas. Courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. 5 weeks later in the canyon del Arroyo, the People's Army numbered 18 compañeros. Hungry, weak, but unafraid, they're learning revolution's trade in the high Sierra Maestra. And in the mountains, winds are blowing, bearing seeds of hope and sowing crops in Cuban earth that mark the birth of victory. On compañeros, do Alavero. Courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. Fought their way across the peak of El Torquino, joined by peasant bands and men from Santiago. They faced Batista's tanks and planes and drove them down into the plains from the high Sierra Maestra. They drove the gangsters from Las Villas straight across the Cordilleras. Santa Clara fell to Che Guevara and was free against Batista, the Fidelista. Courage was their only armor as they fought at Fidel's side with Che Guevara. The fire that on that Cuban beach by Fidel Castro shines all the way to Tierra del Fuego. Sparks are blown upon the breeze and men rise up from off their knees when they see the night is burning. It blazes up in Venezuela, Bolivia and Guatemala. Shows the road that men must go in order to be free. On compañeros, Americanos. For a people's free America, Fidel has shown the way with Che Guevara.
Very good stuff indeed from folk legend Dick Cockin. Remember, if you want to find out more about the Communist Party of Australia, you can go to our website. It's www.cpa.org.au, or you can go to the South Australian blog, and that's www.cpasa.blogspot.com. We'll finish this first episode of Reds Under the Bed by hearing the remainder of the report on Cuba's medicos. This report was given to a recent meeting of the West Adelaide branch of the Communist Party of Australia.
Cuba's planning to build a school of medicine in Africa, and it's contributed to the establishment of 11 faculties of medicine in several third world countries. It's worked in 38 faculties, and currently there are 305 professors working in 24 faculties of medicine from 17 different countries. Yeah, this is the list of the medical brigades. It's a long one. I didn't read it. The very first medical brigade was to Chile in 1960, just after an earthquake there, and just 1 year after the triumph of the revolution in Cuba. The next was to Algeria in 1963, which had just thrown off the yoke of French colonialism. And of course, thanks to the reports from East Timor, we found out that the Cubans have been working there. When you look at the statistics, you have to bear in mind too that after the revolution there was a massive emigration to the United States of professionals, including medical professionals.
So
it's, so it's particularly impressive. Yeah, between 1963 and 2005, 104,437 doctors and health workers have intervened in 101 countries, mostly in Africa and Latin America. And at the 31st of March this year, Cuba had 29,223 health workers in 68 countries. That's more than the World Health Organization and more than Médecins Sans Frontières.
You never hear about it.
No. In 2004...
For example, not hearing about it in East Timor, I think there were four doctors in East Timor.
Like MSF in 2004 had 2,290 doctors and nurses. That's less than one-tenth the Cuban contribution, but you're right, you just don't hear about it. In Pakistan, the Cuban doctors treated 73% of the patients following the earthquakes in 2005. They returned to Cuba in March of this year. And the Pakistan earthquake was huge. There were 70,000 people died. The Cubans installed 32 hospitals. That's 30 field hospitals and re-equipped two existing ones with equipment from Cuba. And Cuba meets all of its own transport and incidental costs. And if they can't treat somebody there, they flew them to Cuba. And 152,674 people received rehabilitation. And you have pointed out that Pakistan is an ally of the United States, and it's no friend of communism. But, you know, the Cubans, they operate on Marti's slogan of "our homeland is humanity." The other one is Indonesia, the island of Java, after a powerful earthquake in May this year. The quote here, the terrible typo in it, but it's from the mother of a little girl who had an open femur fracture after the family house collapsed. The Cubans set up two hospitals in Kelantan, that's on Java, at Prambanan and Gantiwana, and 135 personnel, pardon me, and 96 of those have worked in Pakistan in the Henry Reeve Brigade. And while Cuba's doing all of this throughout the world, it maintains a first-rate health system at home. In my own brief visit, confirmed what other people were saying. I didn't see a lot. But it's obvious that the Cubans are achieving very good outcomes with the resources they have. I visited a polyclinic in a suburb of Havana, and it's a fairly humble building. Sort of makes the Aussie and you want to get out the paintbrush and touch it up. It's not dirty, but it's just quite run down. And in the polyclinic, there was a lot of older gear from Eastern Europe. And however, you know, there's a really wide range of services, and we had a sticky beak in the consulting rooms, and all the people were being treated very professionally and with quite a bit of warmth. And in the morning, you'd see groups of nurses in spotless white uniforms heading off on their rounds to check on people in the community. Here's something you just don't see in Australia. Yeah, the country now produces 80% of the types of drugs and medicines used by the 11 million people. It's got one of the highest life expectancies at 75.2 years and one of the lowest infant mortality rates at 9.7 deaths per 1,000 live births. Scientists at 52 institutes are researching vaccines and therapies for AIDS and Alzheimer's, amongst other things. There are some cooperation agreements for product sales, joint ventures, contract manufacture and research with entities in Latin America, China, Europe, the former Soviet Union and Australia. Cuba has filed applications for 500 patents around the world, and the US is just grudgingly granting 24. Yeah, I mentioned before that Mission Miracle, Mission Milagro, they treated 189,338 patients underwent eye surgery. The program's been extended to 23 countries, 14 from the Caribbean and 9 from Latin America. And from May 1994 to May 2006, 284,750 patients have undergone eye surgery. And it's spreading, you know, like you've got Venezuelan specialists now treating people in Bolivia that were trained by the Cubans. And after Chernobyl in 1986, Cuba took in 19,000 adults and children from three Soviet republics after the disaster, and many are still in Cuba. So, yeah, the view from the north, I asked the question, is everybody happy that Cuba's taking this role in the world? Not at all. Despite testimony from the people in the countries involved, the United States insists that the Cubans are engaged in intelligence work, or at the very least, heavy-handed propaganda. I must say, though, like, the example of these people is good propaganda for socialism as it's practiced in Cuba, but they mean something.
They're not putting out leaflets and all kinds of stuff.
No.
That's it, isn't it? It's America and the rest of us could never believe that someone would do something because they actually want to,
no,
for the good of people.
No, there's an agenda.
Yeah.
Altruism doesn't exist in Cuba.
Like in Venezuela and other countries, rumours are put around that the Cubans aren't real doctors, that they're some sort of barefoot doctors, or that they're
only... Oh, they say that on the American website about Cuba, that the health system is very dubious and, if you're going to go to Cuba, don't plan to get sick there because,
They're not real doctors, they just do acupuncture,
I
remember.
Oh, that
guy.
And they say that they're undermining the livelihoods of local specialists and so on, as if that was an issue in these ranchos and barrios in Caracas. And they, without a shred of evidence, they say that Cuba's really obvious biotech ability is linked with the biological weapons program. Yeah. And... I heard from a couple of sources in Cuba that the Cuban doctors in East Timor weren't treated well by the Australian soldiers. You know, they were treated quite roughly and with great suspicion.
To me, that's the way Australians are anyway.
Yeah.
In Solomon Islands, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
That's no surprise.
Interesting thing. In September 2005, 1,518 members of a brigade were called together to go to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, that's them assembled in
Havana.
And they were named after Henry Reed, and he was called El Inglesito, the little Englishman, but he was born in Brooklyn. He was a US citizen. And he went and fought with the Cubans against the Spanish for their independence in the 1850s. But a White House spokesman, Scott McClellan, he said, "When it comes to Cuba, we have one message for Fidel Castro. He needs to offer the people of Cuba their freedom." That was an injection.
Like a broken record.
Yeah. And the UN rejected a Cuban offer of HIV/AIDS education at the prompting of the US. And they were going to supply retroviral drugs and information kits. The US infection rate is 0.6% of the population. In Cuba, it's 0.09%. You do the maths. But several Latin American and African countries accepted the Cuban offer, and 200,000 people were treated. In 1998, France rejected a Cuban offer to join forces to send medical aid to Haiti, where services were collapsing. Haiti's a former French colony, but in 2004, France sent troops instead. Can we speak of a legacy of Dr. Ernesto Che Guevara in connection with the medical brigades? Well, yeah, I said pretty emphatic yes. This, I love this quote.
Yes, so do I.
Almost
one
restored.
Favorite.
I saw it on a T-shirt the other day. Leslie was wearing it. It almost restored my faith in T-shirts that are on sale around the place. It's got a lot to say about the motivation of the people that go out on these many brigades. And I like the quote above, you know, the superpower that exports life, not bombs and death. Yeah, that's from Pereira, you know, the brother of Inti and Coco, who went with Che Guevara to fight in the jungles in Bolivia. He said it on the occasion of the arrival of a new 140-member medical brigade from Cuba in Santa Cruz in Bolivia. As you know, there's all sorts of changes happening in Bolivia, similar to what happened in Venezuela. Things are happening, you know, slowly, much more slowly than anyone imagined, and by different means than people previously imagined, including Che Guevara. Yeah.
Cantando esta samba con un redoble libertario, mataron al guerrillero Che Comandante Guevara. Selvas, pampas y montañas, patria o muerte su destino. Selvas, pampas y montañas, patria o muerte su destino. Que los derechos humanos los violan en tantas partes, en América Latina, domingo, lunes y martes, nos imponen.